Welcome to the Social Fabric podcast with me, Andrea Splendori, and this week I'll bring you a live recording from the Whale Theatre in Greystones. This podcast was called From Couch to Eternity, and it's a look into running in all its aspects. My guests were Barry Smith, Rene Borg, Emmett Dunleavy, and Orla Byrne. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate, share, and review. It's really important, and it makes a big difference. The title tune is Happy and Shiny by The Roundabouters.
Welcome to the Social Fabric podcast. My name is Andrea Splendori. Hello. And just give me 2 minutes. Before I start to speak, I have something important to say. And that is, I just want to thank a couple of people. It's really important for me to do this. Hello. I'd like to thank Ross McFarland and Brian O'Regan because they keep asking me to do this. It's great. Allow me to come in and do these wonderful shows in this amazing place. So thanks for keep putting trust in me and allowing me to do it. Thank you. And Paul in the control tower there, he just makes sure that the microphones work, the lights work, the music works. So thank you, Paul. And Peter for running an amazing front of the house. You know, I think you all agree that the hospitality in this place is second to none. It's just as amazing. So Peter, Chloe, Tanya, Kian, Isabel, Lauren, and I forgot the other two, but thanks a million. Thank you. And wait, there's two more. There's Nikki and Kia. They're just in the background. You never see them, you never hear them, and everything works all the time. So thank you. That's fantastic. And thank you all for being here. We never really take it for granted that the tickets will sell. We never take it for granted the tickets pretty much sell out. It's a great crowd tonight, I think. So thank you for deciding to spend your Friday night with us. You obviously have nothing else to do, but it's great. When I thought of this show, I thought I was out for a run, believe it or not. I'm going to lose running loosely tonight. I do run, but when you hear the other guys on stage, you'll know there's a difference between what I do and what they do. But I was out for a run, and I thought, what is this couch to 5K, couch to 10K to marathon, what does that actually mean? So I thought I might Google it. And then I thought, actually, I might as well do a show in the theater and see if we can get some answers from some experts. So the four people that are on stage with me tonight know an awful lot about running. And thank you for all of you that kind of suggested them, because their names came from a lot of you. So there's a lot of admiration and respect for the four people on stage tonight. But what I want to do tonight, there's people here that would like to know how to become faster, how to go further. There's people here that would like to get off the couch and run. There's people here have been dragged by their mates and they have no interest in running. So I'd like to give you a 360 of what running is all about. So it's not a running promotion. It's really try to find out, is it really worth running? So you might decide to run tomorrow morning, or you might decide to stop running tomorrow morning. Who knows? That's what we're trying to do. Last thing, I want to thank a really good friend of mine, Ross Thompson. He's always available. If anybody knows Ross, knows that his availability is one of his many qualities. but he's always been a great supporter of the show. And today, not only sponsored the goodie bags for my guests, sorry, none for you, but he also sponsored a beautiful pair of running shoes, Dynafit. So, one. Sorry, it's one pair, it's not one shoe. It's one pair. So, there is a lucky winner tonight who will go home with a lovely pair of Dynafit shoe. So we really do hope it's a female, size 6. They will love that particular color. So good luck with that. If you're not, if you're that bloke at the back with size 11, it's okay, because our friend Damien from Amphibian King has come on board, and you'll bring these pair of shoes back to him, and he'll give you something dinner fit that'll fit you. So thanks to Damien and thanks to Ross for sponsoring the prize. Now, that's enough for me. Very quickly, we're going to do a first half. We give you a chance to stretch your legs halfway through, get to know each other. Please do talk to each other. There's some lovely people in this audience, believe me. Do talk to each other. And you will get a chance to ask those questions, those amazing questions that you have of my panel. So until then, hold those questions. That's my job. So please welcome Emmett Dunleavy, Barry Smith, Orla Byrne, and Rene Borg. Anywhere you like. Anywhere you like. So the first man is Emmett, the second is Barry, the third is Orla, and this is Rene, if you didn't know. So welcome, and thanks a million for taking the time to have a chat with us. So I'm not going to ask you, tell us a bit about yourself, because Orla already told me I hate that question. So if you don't know them, go on their Instagram page or their LinkedIn. Anyway, they all have something to do with running. Let's start from there. But what I want to do, I might start with Emmett, just because it's the furthest for me. Because the show is called From Couch to Eternity, I'd really like to know something that kind of has been in back of my mind. When do we fall out of love with running? Because we all run, right, when we're kids. That's most of us just run from one place to another, and then we fall out of love at some point, I think, and we fall in love with a couch. What happens there?
I suppose we all fall out of love at some stage, and generally it coincides with a bit of a downturn in our form in terms of if we're getting a little bit tired, maybe we've trained a little bit too hard, maybe we've raced a little bit too often. But I think for most of us, and I'm assuming most people here are fairly regular runners, it's even when you do put the runners away for a couple of days, the urge and the itch to get back training comes back pretty quickly. It's less about, I mean, competition is important, improving is important, but I think for most of us, it's a lifestyle as well. It's part of something that we do every single day. And you just mentioned there beforehand that you get out for a run every morning. I think for most of us, it's an integral part of what we do on a daily basis, and we're happier people after we get a run done every day. So even though we take breaks along the way, we're nearly always drawn back to it again. It's part of our DNA as such.
Okay, I asked the wrong person. Orla, what about you? When did you fall in love with running again?
Again?
Were you in love with running before?
I don't know if I ever was in love with running.
Okay, fair enough.
I still question whether I am in love with running on a daily basis. It was definitely during lockdown. So a crowd of us, my sea swimming friends, after a failed attempt with Lisa to do a couch to 5K the year before, we decided to try and do a little bit of running. And so off we went and thought we'd kind of do 5K up to Charles Land and back. Sure, we were jumping in the bushes, hiding and catching them up. And no, we're just here pretending. I couldn't even do 5K. So that was during lockdown. But somehow I managed to build it up and I completely fell in love with it again. And I actually can't imagine my life without running now.
Did you used to run as a kid?
As a child, playing and stuff, yeah, definitely. But not really.
Not really. How about you, Rene? Were you always a runner, or was it just something you picked up when you were a little bit older?
I wouldn't have seen myself as a runner. My father was an orienteer. In Denmark, where I grew up, a very strange type of orienteering, where they would bury radio receivers in the forest, and then they'd go and it would transmit every 10 minutes, and they'd be running around like wild geese in the dark, trying to find these. And I was roped into this when I was probably around six. But like Orla and everyone else, you know, when I was a kid, it was just something you did, and then you became aware that okay, there's a little bit more to this. But I was not a sporty child. You know, I was such a poor performer that my PE teacher took my mother aside once and said, "We think Rene might have a motor skill handicap," as they were allowed to say back then. Imagine saying that these days. But anyway, the running was something my dad kind of introduced me to. So I had known what it was about. I got a pair of Asics at some stage. So I had some familiarity with the idea that if you needed to keep a little bit of fitness in the heart, you could just strap on a pair of runners, an old cotton t-shirt, a pair of shorts, go out the door. But it was really at a very, very low level. It was very on and off. For many, many years, I didn't think of it. And it was only random chance here in Ireland that a hill race came my way. And I just decided to go because I was panicking, training for Dublin Marathon, having not done anything really. So I thought, if you go on an Irish hill and you race, maybe you'll get fit really quick, because that's how it works.
Well, we'll get to that in a second, because I don't know if that's how it works. Barry, you started quite late. You were saying a few years ago, in your 40s. Am I correct?
Yeah. When I turned 40, a few years ago, was being kind to me, so thanks for that.
Do you want to tell us exactly how many years ago?
more than 10 or 12. I suppose I had the choice was either you buy an open top sports car or you do something a bit healthier. So I picked running, and it was strange. It's kind of defined my life for the last 12 years in a very nerdy sense, both the running and all of the stuff that goes with running. I think that's what I like about it most, is that it's this whole lifestyle choice. You know, it kind of consumes you, and there's so much to learn about the running and everything that goes with it. I find that quite interesting.
But Barry is a professor in UCD, is a computer scientist and data analyst and many other things that I don't really understand. But from the data point of view, and then I'll come back to Emmett afterwards, from a data point of view, can you see, is there an age group where there's a peak when we all start running, what's happening? No,
so, will I just tell a little story about how I got to the data? So, yeah, I'm a computer scientist, so I work in machine learning, which is a bit trendy now. It wasn't at all trendy. For 30 years, I've been saying to my friends, no, I'm working on this really exciting stuff. And all of a sudden, and they're like, oh, where were you? You were supposed to be doing all this. Anyway, so when I started running, I signed up for my first Dublin Marathon, and I was doing the training, and I thought, well, I better figure out how this works. So I decided I'd start downloading data from all of the marathon races around the world, as you do when you're a geek. And a few months later, I had 5 million records of people who had run marathons. And then I looked to see, well, how fast do they start their race? Okay, right, I better start at that pace. And what about hitting the wall? Who's hitting the wall? So you can see all that in the data, which we can come to later. But to answer your question, ages, the thing that amazed me was how late the peak is. So the peak is certainly it's much closer to the 40s than it is the 30s, when you look at marathon running at any rate. You see there's people go till their 60s and 70s and beyond. So it's quite incredible. There doesn't seem to be any age reason why you would stop running, certainly at the longer distances, which I think is really great.
Mm. But Emmett, you do a lot of, both you and René do a lot of coaching. You coach different age groups. What I'm interested in finding out is, as Barry said, you had to buy a motorbike or you go out running, so you go out running. But that's okay, we can deal with that. But what about...
The motorbike could be cheaper.
It would be cheaper. But what about when, you do all the races in school, the races in primary and secondary school, and then that's it. Then is that it? It's most people fall out of love with at that stage. Who comes to you? What age group come to you?
Well, I suppose I straddle both sides in that I have an awful lot of club runners. I mean, a lot of the guys from Kilcool that are here, I mean, they would be typically a lot of the club athletes that I deal with. And then I have a high performance group as well that are very much at the sharp end of things. So I suppose I straddle both sides of that. When you look at the younger age groups, probably one of the biggest challenges for us keeping people in the sport is when you get to your mid-teens and late teens, it's a very hard sport to be at a high level, because it you're looking at training maybe 10, 12, maybe 14 times per week. Most of the guys in our elite group are running sort of between 80 and 100 mile a week. There's not much room for anything outside life apart from running in those sort of situations. Now, one or two of them are professional athletes. It's great. A lot of them are probably a little bit below that. But for athletes who are, say, on that pathway, who come into clubs and they're gradually moving towards senior level, there's a huge drop-off rate in the mid to late teens, simply because to be good at the sport, it's a very difficult thing to do, and it's all-consuming. But then when you look at the other side, and I think this is probably a lot of the data that Barry looks at, is you see people coming back in their 30s and in their 40s, and they may have fallen out of love in their earlier years, and now they want to get back into it. And it's as much, okay, there's a little bit of a competitive element to it, but it's as much a lifestyle choice and a healthy living thing as anything. And that's really important as well. And to be honest, that's probably more important than high performance athletics as a general population from a health point of view.
So I just want to ask you a question. You say 13 or 14 times a week? How do you do that?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, it's just 7 days a week, right?
7 days.
just curious. How do you do that? How do you train twice a day?
Yeah, we're starting a campaign for an extra day in the week so they can get some more training. Yeah, I mean, most of those guys would train twice a day, and they'd have gym sessions on top of that as well. So, like, their rest day is on a Friday, and it's usually still a 10k run maybe on a Friday is their rest day. But
right.
just to give you an extreme example, we were in Kenya in early January, and we met a German guy who's currently training to try and break the world 100K record. And his first week of training at altitude, and this is 2,500 meters above sea level, he ran 275 kilometers.
Wow, unbelievable!
So think about how you dice that up over 7 days.
Yeah,
it's a lot of pasta.
Yeah. Well, come to nutrition. I know a couple of people here would love to know more about nutrition. We've come to that, and I loved the fact you say pasta, yeah. Rene. Rene, just what does a running coach do? I bought a pair of shoes a few years ago, and I went for a run, and that was it. I didn't ask anybody, and I just followed a few friends, and I still follow them. I just always behind them. What do you guys do?
Well, usually I have to pay to find out.
That's fine. That's fine. Next.
how do you describe it? You bring in people today, they have less and less time to get the goals that they want. And a lot of the people that come to me, obviously, some have very high aspirational goals, you know, not usually quite as aspirational as Emmett's crew, but up there. But the vast majority of people are just people who have their goal, which could be quite modest, really. But they don't want to waste their time, and they don't want to feel like they're going to get themselves hurt in the process, because there's a lot of that attached to running today. You know, oh, it's bad for the knees, it's bad for the back, whatever they've been told. They might have had issues before. So they want someone to take a lot of that difficulty away. But really all you're doing as a coach, any coach, is you need to get to know people. So it's a bit like getting a new player on board your team. First thing you try and figure out is what position does he play in? What's his or her sprint like? What's their endurance like? You try and form a full picture. What's their life like? That's the most important thing. So they come in, we have a quick chat with them. We get a questionnaire done. We have a little bit more of a formal call. This is my process. There's other processes as well. But the main thing is you get to know people. You find out what their life looks like. When do they work? Do they have night shifts? Do they work weekends? All these things, their training history. And from that, you figure out what they want.
Okay.
Because then you have the A and you have the B, the journey and the destination. I just need then to plot out what do I think, based on all that information, would be the safest way to get them from one spot to the other. And from that, I have to draw on not just my experience, because none of the experience really, you know, I have mine, but most of the things any coach draws on is this enormous history of athletics coaching that's out there, and trying to see what will work for this person. We then, of course, today, because we have all the fancy technologies that, you know, Barry is availing of as well, we can do that from afar now, which we used to have to be trackside, you know, like Emmett in Kilcool and like myself down in my little country club down in Glenlock. That you can't do that for people. Obviously, I have clients who sit over in San Francisco, and I have clients in my native Denmark. So today, with the tools we have and the watches and everything, you can get a very good picture of what people's life is like. You can communicate instantly with them on WhatsApp. And that's really just the process. You know, I'm just kind of I write out a training plan, and I'm someone they can ask the questions they want to ask. And maybe some of them want to be held accountable a bit, but most of the people who come to me, they actually just want, they are already pretty motivated, to be honest with you. So okay. I don't deal with people so often that need a kick up the old ass, you know, excuse my language.
That's okay. That's Danish for ass. Orla, you started recently enough, but you went from running with your friends up at Charlesland to joining the club. Mm-hmm. And do you have a coach? And how did it work?
I might do. So I'm part of Kilcool AC, and there's loads of you here tonight. Hello. And we're so lucky to have Emmett as our coach. He's phenomenal, and he's definitely made a huge change in the way I look at running. You know, it started as a social thing, and once you kind of go up to the track, you know, you can just see so many improvements. The stuff that you learn that I never knew about, you know, it really is incredible. And you know, you just apply it every day to different kind of races that you're doing, and it's such a social scene. It's fantastic, really.
Mm. And Barry, thanks, Orla. Barry, with regards to the data again, just, and I will ask you about your running in a minute, but just I'm curious about the data of again from the couch to getting the shoes on and going on the road is the hardest part, right? We all know. Then there's the first 2K. We'll talk about it in a minute, but. What does the data show? Have you done any research on that in terms of, you know, the hardship of getting up? What stops people from, doing the first 2K?
Yeah, it's hard to dial in on those sorts of questions because, of course, the data tells you about what they did, not what they didn't
right.
do. Right. But you can see certain patterns. One of the things that you see quite frequently that I was surprised at is how many breaks people have in their training, where they're obviously training for, let's say, a half marathon or a marathon, 12 or 14 week period. And most people have a week off, whether that's because they've a niggle or life catches up with them or are on holidays. A significant bunch of people have 2 weeks off, and it doesn't ruin their race. There's a cost to it, but it doesn't mean your race is gone. So that kind of encouraged me and surprised me a little bit.
And Rene mentioned about the wearables, you know, the watches or something that we all wear, and they do everything for us to tell us how fast, how far, and all that. Is it a bit of a hindrance, or what do you think? What do you think? Oh, I know you're the geek, but
I think it produces the data, right?
Yeah, but
if you're not recording your run, it hasn't happened.
What about you, Emmett? What do you think of these wearables? Can it be a bit of a hindrance for us?
I think Strava in particular, I mean, most runners, I think, at this stage are probably on Strava or familiar with it in some shape or form. I think the data element of it, that obviously has kept Barry in a job for the last couple of years, which is great, but it's a great tool for keeping you accountable as well. Because when you're out running sometimes, and you might be on your own, in the back of your mind, you know that this has gone up on Strava afterwards, so you... You're not quite going to sandbag it as badly as you might if that wasn't the case. But it's great information sharing because you get to see an insight into athletes, what they've done. And I've often sat down and gone through athletes training for 10 or 12 weeks before a major marathon or a major half marathon. Like, I have a very exciting life, obviously, sitting down looking at 10 to 12 weeks worth of Strava uploads. But from a coaching point of view, and I know an awful lot of athletes as well, they learn from looking at what other athletes do. Mm. Hopefully they're learning the right things instead of the wrong things. But the more information that we have out there, the better. And I think what it's also happened in the last couple of years in terms of technology and stuff like that, there was a massive gulf between the East African elite athletes and I suppose most of the European and Americans over the last 20 to 30 years since the East Africans began to come on the scene. And what we found over the last few years is that gap is beginning to narrow. And there's probably two reasons for that. I think the technology and science has improved so much over the last few years, and Europeans and Americans are probably embracing it a little bit more. Probably there's an economic factor to that as well. The other side of that equation is that drug testing in Kenya and Ethiopia has become a lot more prevalent, and that has brought them back, and it's bringing us up a little bit in terms of covering that gap. So I think the technology and science has played a huge role in actually changing the playing field at global level when it comes to major championships and stuff like that as well.
So we're going to go in a bit of chronology from the couch to the performance, so we will get to the performance in a minute, but we're just about to get off the couch here. You know, we're just talking. But one of the many reasons that people pick up running, me for one, it's to lose weight, right? That's one of the things people go, yeah, I go running and lose weight. What's the ratio between losing weight and pain when running? No, seriously, because is it worth doing it? Genuinely, and I'm sure somebody else wants to ask that question, but it's my question. Is it worth doing it? How hard it is to lose weight with running versus going to the gym?
Yeah, well, ultimately, if you're trying to lose weight, you're looking for a calorie deficit so that you're burning more calories than you're consuming. So one of the best ways of creating that calorie deficit is through running. I mean, you can do it through many forms of exercise. But run is the best. So why not use that?
Do we all agree, the panel here?
No, I disagree completely.
There you go.
Because I go in and then I have a giant feed after every run. But so that everything that I've burned, I just put back on.
But that's an important point, because the longer you run, the more you want to eat, right?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Is it worth it? Is it worth, René, what do you think?
There's a lot of evidence today that suggests that your eating habits is probably lower hanging fruit if that's all you want.
Okay.
But I think running any activity that you really enjoy and you want to be good at helps you get more interest in your body. And if you're more interested in your body and, for instance, your times, if that's what you're after, then you're more likely to make good choices.
Okay.
So in that way, you could say running is more of what, you know, Charles Duhigg, he wrote this book, you're probably familiar with it, you know, called The Power of Habit, which he says it's a keystone habit. I found that. Because once I got interested in running and being competitive at my level, suddenly I started doing a lot of other things right that before that I never cared about it. You know, there wasn't the incentive to look out for certain habits, getting to bed a little bit earlier, cutting out maybe all the white processed foods, maybe having not quite as many late nights out, all these things. So if running has that effect for people, it's not just about the caloric deficit, but it's that it'll motivate you to do it, to take right choices in terms of lifestyle. Then you might lean up. But you'll hear a lot of strength and conditioning coaches, you know, they'll come on this panel here and they'll say, look, if you really want to lose weight, then it's nutrition and resistance training. But and there's a little bit of truth to all of it.
Yeah, no, but I like that answer. Thanks. The one thing leads to another. And what about Barry? What about the data? Tell me about the data, because it was this I love to know how many people lose weight quickly. And you must know that.
One of the challenges with data is it's pretty obvious from the Strava data that people lie about their weight.
Really? So that's not recorded. You have to put it in. Is it? It's not recorded. It's not something you have to lie about. Okay, so there's no. But what about you then? When you started running at 40, what changed for you physiologically? What happened to you?
I got a lot more tired. I'm not sure if that was the running or the age. Yeah, I lost weight, fell off. I also started eating more than I had ever eaten before. I have a very sweet tooth, so I view running as it gives me a bit of license to have a cake after my run. I still do that, I must say. But yeah, I mean, you certainly will lose. If you're running 50 or 60 kilometers a week, that's, what is it, about 800 calories per hour or so?
Yeah. 800 calories per hour, okay, wow. So 60 is a lot of calories.
Yeah, that's like 2 or 3 days of food.
Wow.
that I now have to figure out a way again on top of my normal food.
So before I ask Emish or you know those first 2 kilometers we were talking about, those horrible 2 kilometers.
Yeah.
So we're now you're literally just a foot off the couch. With just a couple of people here, they're going to get off the couch tomorrow morning, and this couple of people are going to leave at halftime because they're just going, what's the point? But those two people, they can't wait to get off the couch. How do we get over those two tedious? It's boring. Sorry, guys, it's boring. The first 2 kilometers is the most boring thing you can ever do in your life. Then it gets better, but...
It is boring, but exactly that. You have to remind yourself that... I always say to myself when I'm having a run, I think, oh, God, this, I'm not having a good day. This, I'm not enjoying this. I always remind myself, no, this is a dip. Because for me, there's always a dip. And then I always come up the other side. And then I get into my flow, and I love it. I think it's just setting yourself up. You know, for anyone who is actually thinking about getting up and starting running, it's just set yourself for success. You know, get yourself organized. Get your, if you do like all the gadgets and all that, you know, get your watch, you know, charged the night before. Stop looking for excuses. Oh no, I didn't charge my earphones. Damn, I can't go for a run. No, charge them the night before. Lay out your gear. Just try and build it into your routine. You know, set a time in the day that you go for your run, like you say. And for me, it was definitely about the accountability. Mm-hmm. You know, if I didn't have my first running buddy, Aoife, you know, if I wasn't meeting her and some of the gang at 6 o'clock at the Cove on Monday morning, sure, I would have been just turning over, you know. There's so many ways you can help yourself to just get up and get out and get past that initial, oh no, you know, that slog. And then I just do a lot of positive talk, you know, if I'm kind of feeling this is really boring and I'm not feeling this, I just remind myself, you know, you can stop any time. No one's told you to do this. Mm. You know, you're doing this for you. And, you know, I remind myself actually how lucky I am. I have a good friend, he's probably here somewhere, Paddy, and he always says to me, you know, we get to do this. And he's so true, you know. I mean, there's lots of people that don't get to do it, so there's so many more benefits that outweigh the negative, you know, bit of pain.
Lovely. So if you're not going for a run tomorrow morning after that, I don't know what's going to change it. Thanks a million. But Emma, so if I come to you and I am that person that wants to start running, how do you set me off on the right foot, for wanting a better word? How do you? I know you work with performance athletes and all, but you know, I come to you, or anybody from this audience come to you and say, look, I'm ready to go. What can I do? What do you say to them?
The first thing, and probably the most important aspect of it, is exactly what Orla said there, is get a group to run with.
Okay.
Because that not only gives you accountability, but it puts a time in the diary, you know, every day or a couple of times a week, whatever it might be. And it makes the whole thing a hell of a lot more enjoyable if you've got people to meet. So, I mean, if anybody's here and they haven't ran before, I'd say get yourself into Kilcool Athletic Club, running a Couch to 5K program at the minute. But the social aspect of it is so important. You know, from everyone right up to the elites, it's really, really important that you've got people to share the burden and share the pain. Because not while running... Running is very enjoyable in hindsight. It's not always enjoyable at the time that you're actually doing it. You know, and a bit like, you know, any race that you do, people say, oh, I really enjoyed that. It's like, if you stop them halfway through, they're not enjoying it. If there was a panic button to get out, most people would hit it. So it's enjoyable, like I said, in hindsight, but at the time, having people to do it with makes a huge difference, and it makes it a lot more, the whole experience a lot more enjoyable when you've got people to share it with.
You say something upstairs. You say something about the social aspect. It actually helps recovery, which I never heard of before.
I don't know if people use Twitter, but there's a guy, Steve Magnus. He's an American, very famous coach and physiologist, and he publishes, or I suppose he tweets a lot about published research. And one of the things that he talks a lot about is the impact of social interactions after your hard training sessions. So it's something that with our group that we try and do quite a lot, and that we train on a Saturday morning or maybe on a Tuesday night, but that there's always a coffee or something afterwards. And there's an awful lot of research to show that if you're in a relaxed social setting with friends afterwards, it helps you unwind after a hard training session or after a hard race. Brings down those cortisol levels, a lot of the stress hormones, and probably a lot of the positive benefits are probably not that quantifiable, but there is an awful lot of data to say, right, this is a really useful thing to do after hard training.
That's wonderful, because I met Rene. I've never met any of these guys, by the way. I only met Rene once on a run, and that was a social run that you involved with what's it called? Wicklow Wolf
Running Club, yeah.
No, it's a wonderful thing, Wicklow Wolf, to do this running on a Friday evening, and then there's an after where we just sit around and have a drink with or without alcohol, whatever you want. But what's that all about, and how is progressing? Because I know it's relatively new, but what do you see from that kind of a running club, social club?
Well, what it comes into is, it's a very old question. It's a question that you can give two people the same type of training, the same type of approach, and you get totally different responses. You would say, well, if the two people are very different, then that makes sense, because they're not at the same starting point. But you still see this even if people are very similar. Mm-hmm. So that means there's something else that affects. It's not just what you put in to stress a person with. And what they've realized over the years is another good Irish researcher actually called Dr. John Kiley. What he found is the emotion that you attach to everything you do, and that means all physical exercise as well, changes the physiological response that you get. So that means if you're very stressed and negative, or anything, any negative emotion like that, let's say you hate something, you're not going to get the same physiological response as someone who loves what they're doing, or who at least is positively agitated about it. So you could easily see a social running club obviously makes that a lot easier. Mm. So does just being good friends with the people, or being interested in the people that you run with, or just perhaps welcoming the camaraderie. I know a lot of us in 2020 to 2021, the times when we could come together and run was a real lifesaver, especially in the local community, because we had a period, my wife and I, who runs as well, where that was our main social interaction, you know, was these small meetups where we could go run together. So in many ways, with every activity you have to try and design it around how can I actually attach some kind of positive emotions to this. You know, during is good, but certainly after. And before is good too. You know, if you can look forward to it, you know, you have that feeling of anticipation. That doesn't happen for races, usually, by the way. You know, that's usually a different type of anxiety. But most people, unless the race is a total disaster, and that does happen, unfortunately, they have a tremendous buzz and high and sense of achievement, you know, afterwards. And that then obviously, as you can see often at the parties after races, means that a lot of the hardness and the stiffness of legs is totally forgotten the moment the DJ starts playing.
That's true, yeah. And Barry, you were saying you mainly run on your own, and you kind of now got to a point you want to run with somebody.
Yeah, no one wants to run with me.
That's the other prize tonight.
Tell us a bit about what brings you to think you want to run with somebody. What's been happening?
It's pretty clear cut. The few occasions where I have run with other people, it's been more enjoyable and more effective as well. You know, there's a little bit of kind of natural competition that builds up when you're running with other people, especially if you run with people that are better than you, which is easy for me to do because that's the way the world works. And, you know, it pushes you along a little bit. I'm very keen on figuring out how to get into a running club and see if they'll have me.
We can sort that out for you, no problem.
I think the athletic, Kilcool Athletic is full at this stage. Okay, just a couple of more things before we might have a bit of time. We're now running. We're now doing this. In my head, we're already off the couch. We're doing the first 2K with the motivational speaking that you gave us, both of you. So we're ready to go. How do we keep it going? What's the thing? There you go. You need to go for a run. How do we keep it going? How do we, you know, we're off for a run. We've done a week or two, and then.
I definitely think a lot of it comes down to accountability. At the beginning, for me, for sure, you know, if I didn't have people to show up to. And the other thing is, I think, you know, for some people it works, some people it doesn't work. But for me, definitely having something in the diary, you know, when you get to the stage where you feel confident to do a race or an event, you know, you have a plan, you have a time, you have a goal, and it just makes you kind of show up, you know, it just makes you think, right, well, I need to be fit for that, so I need to just basically get out the door and do it. Some days you feel like going out with people and having the social aspect of it, but sometimes I just want to get out and listen to the birds, feel the fresh air, stop and take my time, look at the sea, listen to a podcast. So both works, it just depends. But keeping it going, I think you just also just really have to think about all the, I mean, you learn so many attributes that come from running that you can that apply to all of your life. You know, like, you know, when you endure and when you set yourself goals, you know, the commitment, the discipline, you just gain so much, and that keeps me going anyway.
When Orla did the inverted commas planning for a race, the first race was a marathon, the Dublin Marathon.
The first race we did, I think, was a virtual Bohemian because it was during lockdown. Yeah. So we thought if we can get to 10K, we might do the mini marathon. But sure, everything was closed then. So my friend and so then we did the 10K within a week or something. So we said, we'll be trying to Bohemian, but we were still so lacking confidence. We were like, but don't tell anyone, like, just in case we can't do it, you know. So we did that, and then we said, well, should we just sign up for a marathon? I said, yeah, of course, why not, you know. And then a few of us signed up, Connell and my husband Carl, and a few of us. And sure, I was just looking forward to going to Clonakilty and staying at the hotel. I mean, you know, I really wasn't taking it very seriously. And then Eva said, yeah, so it's the Clonakilty, but have you looked at the profile? Sure, it's like the hilliest road marathon in the country. I was like, you're actually kidding me. Like, what? So then we said, should we just do a little virtual one beforehand just to see if we can do the distance? So we ran 46K all the way out along Dublin Bay. And it was actually glorious. I remember she picked me up at 4 o'clock in the morning because it was in the summer. And we were used to getting up early for sunrise and swimming. And sunrise was early then anyway, so we drove out to Dorky, we parked the car, got on our gear, and we ran out to Clontarf and all the way back, and lots of the friends and everything were there to meet us in Glasshill, and it was absolutely amazing. It was phenomenal.
Brilliant. Well done. Barry, what was your first race, I should say? What did you sign up for when you got started?
I went straight into it full on Dublin Marathon. So
definitely picked the wrong people here.
I wasn't very responsible. I had a good dose of proper flu the week before. My first day out of bed was to go and pick up my bib at the expo, and I ran it. I don't remember it, but I did run it.
And what was your time?
That was about 4:30 something.
Now, the reason I'm asking that question, because I know the answer to the last one he did, because he told me the day before yesterday. What was your last time, your last marathon?
You have to tell all your good times to everyone you meet.
What was your last? So that was, what was it, 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So what was the last marathon you did last year?
Dublin.
Yeah, what was the time?
3:18.
Ooh.
Now.
Well done.
But it doesn't make any sense, Emmett. So he's getting older, and he's getting faster. How does that work?
But his training age is only about 12.
But how does it work?
There's two athletes that I coach that are masters athletes, and they're both in their 40s. One of them just missed the Olympics last time around by 4 seconds over the marathon. Oh. She's 42, Anne-Marie McGlynn from Derry. And a guy called Brian Maher down in Kilkenny, a lot of people might be familiar with him. Brian's 45, and Brian ran 14:20, and he ran 30 minutes and 10 seconds for 10K this year. But I use those as examples because they're people who came to the sport late. Like they both, Anne-Marie ran when she was younger, and then she only came back in her 30s. So effectively, while they're in their 40s, mid-40s, their training age is only about 10 or 12. They haven't had those really hard years through their teens and through their 20s. And I think with the likes of Barry, and I think an awful lot of people who come to the sport in their 30s, there's so many, low-hanging fruit in terms of progression because your training age is quite young. So you can easily run very well into your 40s and well into your 50s if you're new to the sport. And in terms of your aerobic development, that can go on for a very, very long time. So Barry will be back here in a few years' time and he'll tell us about a quicker marathon that he's ran.
But I never heard of that before, the training age. So you're saying, because he started only 10 years ago, 12 years ago, whatever. Let's call it 10, just to make him feel better. 10 years ago, he's only 10 years because he hasn't had the damage done to him. Really?
Yeah, effectively. Because those two athletes that I gave you the example of, I mean, had they been training hard through their 20s, maybe they'd have run a little bit quicker when they were younger. But the reason that they're running, the predominant reason that they're running well into their 40s is because their training age is much younger than most 40-year-olds who've come through the sport.
Never heard that before. So there you go. I learned something. I hope you learn too. Or maybe I'm the only one that never heard that before. There you go. I need to ask about the data about this because I'm curious. Are you the outlier or most people are getting faster?
It seems like people peak in and around their 40s. So the fastest. But there are plenty that peak later. Just to go back to an earlier question you had, Andre, about how do you keep going and keep motivated? One of the really surprising things that when I was looking at the data recently about how people are training is that it seems pretty clear that recreational runners run too fast when they're training. And I wonder whether that's responsible for exhausting them and then you don't enjoy it as much as you should and then training doesn't go as well as it might and you don't hit your race goals. Because when you look at the data, faster runners by race time run a lot slower during their training relative to that race time than recreational runners do. So it looks like recreational runners are just training too fast, tiring themselves out during the week. They can't do their fast sessions fast enough because they're not doing their slow sessions slow enough. And I think we could, maybe it becomes more enjoyable if we just stop trying to hit our race goals during every training week and take it easy for, well, they say 80% of your training should be done at a conversational pace.
Yeah, it's a good friend of mine, I think he's in the audience here tonight. Before my first marathon, he said to me, start slow and pull back from there. And I've been using it ever since.
Yeah.
And in fact, a couple of days ago, I met somebody in the restaurant here, and he said to me, oh, I saw you walking down the harbor the other day. I said, what day was it? It was a Tuesday. I said, oh, shit, that was the day I was out running. So that's me, but, no injuries. It's a true story, and I don't know if the guy's here. So I thought, that's great. But we'll come back to this slow, because I want to touch on the injuries and performance later on. But just before we go on the break, Reina, do you agree with what the guy said here in terms of speed? Are you getting faster? And your people you're coaching, are they getting faster with age?
Generally, yes. But the training age thing is real. I say most people.
Well, I wasn't doubting them, but I never heard it before. I just never heard it before.
But I think what they're saying here really brings together nearly all the things we've touched upon, which is running, if you can pick it up and you can learn to use it as a tool to get to know yourself better, then you can learn how to train right. And what does that involve? Well, that's one of the things we actually have to do as running coaches if we want to be responsible. You have to teach people about their own gears and the intensities that you run at. And that means you have to understand, what do the different intensities actually feel like? Like, what is it that happens to you when you run that tells you that you've moved from one state to another? It's not as obvious as it might sound. But the first thing we have to try and think about is, why are the different intensities there? Take sprinting or running really, really hard, let's say for 3 minutes, as hard as you can, till you're blue in the face. What is that designed for, that system? It's designed for emergencies, of course. Yes, a lion is hunting you down, a pair of brigands, something like that. So that is a stressful state for the body. It's not a healthful state per se. If you do it and you have time to bring yourself back down, get your recovery in what they call rest and digest, then obviously you can heal from that and you can become stronger, you know, just like the warriors of old. That's, of course, how they trained themselves. That was the idea. But if you do that too much, and if that's all you do, not only are you telling your body, look, running is an emergency, and it's always an emergency. And if you also have a stressful life, which many of my clients do, maybe the very stressful job, 3 young kids, long commute, there's stress everywhere then. And eventually, there's no rest and digest in the day. And then all you get is breakdown. And this is where this whole idea, we have to look at, well, what's the slow gear for? Well, that's for transport, really. Now, some people say it's for persistence hunting. That's a whole topic in itself, right? That we apparently were designed to run animals to death. And there might be something to that. But by and large, it's about transportation. That means being able to run, getting fit enough again, as you were as a kid, to run so easily that you can breathe through your nose, right? That'd be a cue. There's barely no sweat. You can talk away pretty much as I'm doing now. You can breathe through your nose, but you're actually running. But this is the lowest gear. You can bring it up a little bit. You mightn't be able to have full paragraphs, but you can still talk comfortably. And that's where the majority of the running has to be, because that gives a totally different response. Right? That's healthful. It doesn't tell the body that, okay, this is an emergency. So that means you don't get that enormous response that your body then has to calm down after. And that is the foundation for fitness, because it teaches, you know, hundreds of things we could talk about. Oxygenation is something a lot of people are interested in, right? It makes your heart stronger. It creates a lot of systems inside the body that gets more oxygen out there, and that means you feel better. Right? There's a better flow of everything in your body. And the hormonal release is totally different than from high-intensity exercise. It's much more zen, and you generally recognize, this is my favorite thing, I recognize it when I'm out running and I hit this zone, I get good ideas, and I start solving problems I had, you know, in the email back in the house. Whereas if I run a little bit faster, that doesn't happen. I might get a bit of a kick, you know, a different, and that's the adrenaline. So there's the kick and the rush, but they're two different drugs, and you need to take one of them very sparingly and the other one a lot.
Yeah, I like that. Barry, you were nodding there, so is Orla. Let's start with Barry. Do you feel that? Do you feel the ideas coming when you're running slower?
Oh, yeah, all my best ideas come when I'm running slowly, yeah. But I've forgotten about them by the time I get out of the shower. That's the problem. I'm a big believer in lots of slow running. It's more enjoyable, and it, as I was saying, it frees you up then to do the harder session. I can just about manage one hard session a week, and I'm usually quite disciplined about that, and it wrecks me. And you know, but you need to be well rested by the time you get into that, and that's your bit of hardship, and the rest of the week is pleasurable running. It's great.
Sounds good. Orla, your training age is a toddler. You're like 2.5. So you've like, by the time we'll meet you again, you'll be done a marathon in an hour or something.
By the time you meet me again, I'll be dead.
How's that for you? Can you see that in the last couple of years? Can you see yourself getting faster, getting...
Absolutely, yeah, 100%. I mean, when we started running, I was just running just to kind of hang out with the gang, and I didn't want to have FOMO, you know? But then when I started running, I just realized that it was something that I really liked, and I just kept going, and then I suppose I started improving. And then when we joined the club, that's when I definitely started seeing improvements with speed and distance that I could do, and then better speed at distance. And then the curiosity just comes and you just want to see, well, how far can I push this? Can I get a bit faster or can I go a bit further? For me, it's definitely about going further. Yeah, but like that, I mean, I absolutely love the long runs that are slow. And at the beginning, I remember it was all about trying to be really fast and, you know, checking your Strava stats. And it was all vanity stats, like, do I look like I was doing good there? Yeah, yeah. But it means nothing. I mean, because ultimately, sure, like, I'd be stopping having the huffing and the puffing, and then I turn it back on and it looks like I was really fast, but sure, it's nonsense. But I remember Emmett saying...
Don't say that. Barry's going to leave the stage.
But I remember...
He's starting to sweat.
I remember Emmett saying, he just would be nodding his head, like, on what he's doing. Like, you know, like, it's 80% slow, 20% fast. Do your, you know, work really hard on your speed sessions, and then when you're out there taking it easy, take it easy. And for me, a lot of my slow runs would be almost, you know, like that thinking, you know, almost you go into a meditative state. I mean, you could almost say it's like a spiritual experience for some people. I mean, I really... especially on a very long run, and especially if it's in nature and in the mountains, it's almost spiritual for me. I'm like, oh my God. You know, you start kind of just thinking, isn't this just so beautiful? And isn't life so wonderful? And I think when you're killing yourself, like you said, you just don't feel it because you're so busy just trying to be fast and thinking about how fast am I going, you know?
As I say, I never really met anybody tonight. I just met, I've seen Orla running around the town, but then the last time I met her, it was at the end of the Art O'Neill, which is this insane race, which we're going to talk about after the break. And it's, I don't know, it's insane. It's 65 kilometers starting at midnight from Dublin. It gets to Glenmalure, and that's where I met Orla in Glenmalure, having a big fry. I don't know where you were having a big fry, the table was. But we're going to talk about that, how insane those runs are. But let's take a quick break to stretch your legs and to come back in 10, 15 minutes, if that's okay. Thanks a million.
I hope you enjoyed part one of my conversations about running in the Whale Theatre in Greystones. Please tune in for part two. And if you enjoyed it, please rate us, review us, and share the episode. Thank you.
Some dreams broken. Sunny days, now shining like the sunny days. We love sunny days.